This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
All right, delighted to have with us on the show now, former University of Miami quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, and this past season, number 13 retired. And with us is Gino Chiaretta. And Gino, always great to catch up with you, especially here in the offseason. Thank you for being with us. How you doing?
All good, Joe. Anytime. I would complain about the weather, because I think this is probably in my 35 years down here in Miami, this is probably the worst start of January that I've ever had. But we're complaining about 70 degrees and partly cloudy, as opposed to minus 20 up north.
Usually, and as the case this year, we've gone away a couple of times to Syracuse and South Bend, where the weather is miserable, only to return usually to sunny South Florida, except since the middle of December has been raining or cloudy. So hopefully it will clear up here in February, and you can get out on the golf course. Let me ask you this. This past season, your number was retired at Hard Rock Stadium. What did that mean to you and your family, and what was the day like?
Oh, it was a tremendous honor. I mean, I think the university did a great job on the whole weekend. Rick Remmert and Jessica Green did phenomenal. We had a little cocktail reception over at the Rathkeller with some teammates and some people within the university, friends, family, and that. And then at the game and seeing a lot of my former teammates. Just a lot of great memories. I think the only change I would have loved if it was in the old Orange Bowl, but that's a long time ago, and brought back a lot of great memories. Good to see guys that I don't get to see often, and I don't get a chance to go to many of our own games. So it was a fun weekend for all.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you don't get to see a lot of games. That's because you're broadcasting games, and I want to get to that in a minute, what you see in college football. But one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show tonight, besides talking to you about the number being retired, and we haven't had a chance to catch up, this is an odd time in college athletics, especially college football. The University of Miami brings in a quarterback, Cameron Ward. He's had 4 years of college football, at two different schools, so this will be his third school. What do you think of, number one, what you're seeing, and then we'll kind of dive in to what Cameron Ward brings to Miami and maybe the decisions they have to make, but here comes a quarterback in for 1 year.
Well, I think that, obviously, the coaches and Coach Cristobal and Coach Dawson feel they can help the roster by bringing in an experienced quarterback. I think that when you look at their roster, Ja'Cory played a little bit, and then Emory played and then got hurt. So I think that anytime you're able to bring in, I think, somebody with experience that you'd feel comfortable running the offense, I think that's probably why they did that. I think he's a big, he's a physical, he's a talented player. I think that. Obviously that, my take with quarterbacks is, and it doesn't matter how good you are. I mean, whether you're Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Tua, or anybody, you're only as good as the other 10 guys around you. Now you can be elite and elevate those other 10 guys, but those other 10 guys have to play. So I think that, that's the question. We're still going to need guys on the outside that can step up, you know, the offensive line was markedly better than a season ago. So I think that, you know, just looking at that, and you're going to have a guy that, you know, even though he's young, he's already been in a couple different systems. So he obviously, you know, recognizes concepts and things like that that he's going to have to learn with an offense, and he'll kind of hit the ground running, and we see where it goes from there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. You went through a coaching change and a philosophical change at the University of Miami. So I think you're very skilled probably to answer this. So here comes Ward in. What's the best way to go about this for 1 year? Does the University of Miami and Shannon Dawson adjust to what Cameron Ward was running and fix their and slant their offense toward what Ward was comfortable with and calling, or does Ward have to learn all new terminology and adjust to Miami?
Well, I think he's going to have to learn all new terminology and adjust to Miami as far as how plays are called, formations and things like that. So that's going to be repetition. That's going to be, you know, through spring ball and all in the winter and next summer. But I would say that when the coaches see him as they go through competition and, you know, they go through, you know, spring ball and things like that as the competition heats up, is all great offensive coordinators are going to skew the offense towards, you know, their best 11 on the field and what they feel gives them advantages. So I'm sure that, you know, Cam Ward, with his experience, he can, you know, tell the coaches, hey, these are concepts that I'm very comfortable with, that I've seen looks in the past and would feel comfortable running those concepts. These are my favorite plays. I think that any great offensive coordinator does that with a quarterback, is, you know, you kind of go into every week of, here's what the, you know, I mean, we can draw plays up on the blackboard and it looks great, but if the quarterback isn't comfortable with running those plays, then you have to, okay, well, you tell us what plays you're comfortable with, and then we kind of, you know, match the hatch and go forward with a game plan and that. But I think it's going to be kind of partly what the personnel is going to allow us to do, and also, you know, what the quarterback is most comfortable and what he has had the most success doing.
You come from an era where, for the most part, your guys battle things out. There was a lot of competition. Everybody enjoyed that competition. I think we often talk about the competition on Green Tree. Now, there were a couple of guys that did bail out of the University of Miami during your time. But that being said, they bring in the quarterback Ward. Jakari Brown got a taste of it in the Pinstripe Bowl. Emory Williams played against Florida State and Clemson. Here comes a transfer in to be the starting quarterback. What would your advice be to the other guys on the roster, the other quarterbacks?
I would say play as best as you can. Because, yeah. I mean, if I'm the coach, doesn't matter how experienced the guy is coming in, you know, he's not given the job. I think that you make everybody compete for the position. Now, might he get more reps initially? Or, I mean, you know, with Dennis, we took the same amount of reps, the starter and the backup. So it was, you know, it was a kind of an even deal. And then you'd match, okay, see what the evaluation process is at that point in time, and see if there's clear separation in their competition. But if I'm Emory or I'm Jakari, I wouldn't back down from anybody. I mean, I think that, you know, Emory showed some flashes that, you know, probably well beyond his experience or years. And Jakari, I mean, I think that the sky's the limit. He's physically talented as anybody in the league. I'd say he's probably as talented as Cam Ward. Okay, well, you know, where does that get you? And I think that I wouldn't back down from anybody. I think that's, you know, part of the being a Hurricane. It doesn't matter what position you are. I don't really care how good you are, what hot shot you were as a recruit. You know, you go out there and battle and let the chips fall.
If anybody knows, it's you, that it only takes a knuckle hitting a helmet to be thrust into action.
Much so. You know, I think that, you know, I was fortunate, you know, my redshirt freshman year, you know, Dennis came in. So, you know, we had obviously Steve Walsh turned pro early. Craig was a starting quarterback. And fortunately, my brother Jeff was like, you know, you have to prepare that you're the starter. And so I kind of did that every week. And I will say this, our scheme and system that we ran, like I said, it wasn't the starter got three reps and the backup got two reps and the third guy got one every, you know, few series. We played, the backups got the same amount of reps as a starter. So I had plenty of reps, you know, through the spring and through the fall and felt good about the offense going in. And maybe my head was clear because, you know, as a true freshman learning Gary Stevens and Coach Johnson's offense, I was, you know, I was just learning that, and it hadn't been ingrained into my head the concepts and how to prepare and that was. But as far as, you know, getting reps calling plays, I mean, I was running the scout team of other teams' offenses, and when Craig, you know, hurt his hand, broke his knuckle against Michigan State, you know, I went in and, you know, heck, I guess, you know, when you're young, you don't know any better, Joe. You just kind of go out and do it. I promptly threw one of the other team and Carlos Jenkins on a hitch route and had to make some adjustments, and it went all right, and we won a couple of games.
Yeah, that's still – the Michigan State game is still one of my all-time favorite games, not because Craig got hurt. A couple of things. One, they had a great crowd, an unbelievable crowd. It was a beautiful day. The way the game finished with a Huerta field goal and just the guts and moxie that it took to win that game. That was the heart of a champion with that team.
Well, no question. I mean, it was a very experienced group. I mean, I obviously I was only a redshirt freshman, but, you know, Bernard Clark and, you know, Cortez and Greg Mark and all these guys that had been there for years and were used to obviously, you know, playing for national championships. And you know, I still remember because Coach Arnold, our tight ends coach, was from Michigan. Yep. And was good friends with Coach Perlis. And, you know, Michigan State was a top 10 team at the time. So, you know, we went up there. They had Percy Snow, and ended up being a first-round pick. They had a couple stud defensive linemen. And I remember scrambling at one point in time and running out of bounds. And Percy Snow was mouthing off to me and, like, trying to stay in bounds. He wanted to hit my head off. I was like, talking smack like a, you know, young punk. I was like, look at the scoreboard. And I'm like, I get back in the huddle. I'm like, you dummy. I mean, like, this guy could rip your head off. I'm like, what are you doing? But it was just kind of the emotions. Emotions got the best of me in that part. And I don't know if I ever talk smack during a game.
Yeah. That's the game where Bobby Harden injured his nerve in his shoulder, and to this day, he's still kind of recovering from that. But Miami won that game. Gino Toretta is with us. Before I bring it back to today's college athletics, Dennis Erickson earlier in the season last year, he and Jimmy Johnson also were honored. Now that we have a chance to look back at Dennis Erickson, you played for him. And I look at all these spread offenses. I have to chuckle because I think as we look back, he was probably way ahead of everybody.
way ahead, Joe. Yeah. All those guys, Mike Leach and Mummy and you know, the quote unquote air raid, all those guys came to Miami and watched us practice. You know, they would come down in the spring and spend a week as we were in our spring ball, and that was back, you know, God, practices were open. I mean, right. I still remember summer before my junior year. I mean, there was people on the sidelines with handy cams, like, filming our practice.
Right.
And now it's like, you know, it's got to be like Fort Knox everywhere I need to go through pre-TSA to go watch a practice at some school. So, but those guys all came down. It was a kind of a perfect marriage, if you will. It was the athletes that we had, and it was a spread, wide open offense that Coach Erickson had kind of perfected through, you know, Jack Elway and all the guys that he coached with you know, I remember when Jimmy came in and announced he was leaving, and Dennis had recruited me to Washington State to go there from Northern California, and Coach Arnold recruited me, and obviously, I came here, and when I had teammates after Jimmy left, and they said Dennis Erickson is going to be our head coach, and I remember sitting down with Lamar Thomas. Lamar was like, "I'm transferring. I'm going to Gainesville," and I was like, "Why would you go to Gainesville?" I'm like, "This guy plays four wideouts every play, sometimes five wideouts." And I said, "I go, if you're not one of the best five wide receivers right now on this roster as a true freshman, then go ahead and go."
Yeah.
I go, "But you're crazy to leave here before even seeing what he does." And I was like, "Just go through spring ball," and sure enough, he stuck around and ended up breaking the record for most catches in our school's history. So, that went well. It was just it was a perfect union of a spread offense, and I would say the only thing different than some of the stuff that some of these offenses are doing now is we didn't run we didn't run RPOs, we didn't run quarterback option stuff,
right.
Because Coach E and even Coach Johnson wanted his quarterback sitting back and not taking hits and throwing the ball and distributing the ball to great athletes.
Yeah, we did have a power run game though too. So you have a very good administrative mind. So put your administrator hat on and look at college athletics. Guys can transfer as many times as they want now, or student athletes can transfer four times in 4 years if they want to in any sport. Where do you think all of this is going, and is there going to be a good solution?
Well, I would say this. I think if a kid wants to transfer, he can transfer. I think that the so-called transfer portal being opened as the season still goes on, especially for teams that have a chance to win a national championship, and making players, decide then, and then coaches have to figure out, okay, what kind of advice do I give this player? It's kind of ridiculous. Now if it's after, all the games are played, or after spring ball, but essentially right now in the current system, a player is a free agent twice a year, every single year of their college career. And I don't think that's right. Now, I don't, if a guy wants to leave, and it should be okay once a year, whether you like a place or don't like a place, or you think you're going to get an opportunity elsewhere. Guys making money, I'm all for it. Hey, NIL, whatever it is, if you become a star and you can make money doing commercials and do deals with businesses, I'm all for it. I think that, where the NCAA kind of basically the cart out of the horse is these collectives that all these universities are forming, but then they're not supposed to know about them and NIL was basically the law was enacted. So if Gino Toretta became a star at the University of Miami, he could go to Big Cheese and do a deal with Big Cheese, and they could pay for his food, whatever that marketing deal is. Like with Caleb out in Los Angeles at USC, he can do a commercial with Dr. Pepper. That was what it was allowed for. Nowhere in this NIL stuff was anything about collectives. And essentially it was, okay, now we can pay the kids. Let's just get a pile of money from boosters and just start giving it to the players and inducing, players from other schools, because it's happening everywhere. It doesn't matter if it's here, Bama, Michigan, it doesn't matter. They're all trying, they want to entice a player to come play, and part of it is money. And you can't blame the kid, because if somebody's going to offer a bunch of money, the amount of guys that are going to the NFL, it's not a guaranteed lock you're going to go to the NFL, but if you can, make a sizable chunk of cash in college and, for change in schools, heck, if you're a normal student, you do the same thing, But I just think the free agency stuff twice a year and every year is a little much. I think they should close that window to once a year. It shouldn't be anything to do with, during the season. It puts a lot of onus on the coaches to recruit and then to re-recruit and then to also, you have to have a personnel department to evaluate other rosters of – who wants to be a free agent and come to your place? Because that's kind of what they're doing.
Yep. Last thing for you, and probably almost impossible to answer this, but you see a lot of games through your through Touchdown Network, and you go from college campus to college campus. How would you compare where the University of Miami is football-wise with the best that you've seen, and how much further does Mario have to make up, or how much more ground does Mario have to make up?
Well, I think with facilities, we have enough facilities to win. I you know, obviously you've been around it longer than I have, and those facilities are a lot better than when we were as successful as we were from 83 to 2001. So there's that. I think that it has, the landscape has changed probably so much in, even in the last year, of schools are rethinking of, do we really need to pay for facilities, or do we reassess our assets and pay for the players?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what's happening now is administrations across the board in athletics are like, do we really need to spend X number of dollars to put a slide in a waterfall in a building to entice a player? Because the player now is going back to, you know, heck, when, you know, I remember the old dungeon when I got here, the ceiling of the freshman locker room was barely 6'8". I mean, you had to duck to go in the locker room when I got to school. So I think that, you know, players are even like, hey, I don't really care. As long as I got a field, as long as I got a weight room to work, you know, I have a staff, I have a nutrition staff that's going to help me get better, and a coaching staff that's going to help me get better. I don't need, you know, all these bells, whistles, and things like that. So I think that I'm sure you can always improve, you know, with whatever. I think with the University of Miami, it's tough because the value of the land down here is pretty expensive, and they don't have a lot of free dirt that's on campus. But you know, I think that we can always look to improve and that. But I think that facilities and what they have and what they do for the athletes now are very good. And you know, I think it's just, you know, Mario's done great in the last few recruiting cycles, and I think it's just a matter of you continue to do that, and then those wins and victories happen on the field.
Hey, they kick it off this year against the Gator in Gainesville on August 31st.
It's gonna be awesome. You know, those games against the Gators, we got to do a sky point to Coach K because he couldn't stand them. I had to learn all about that coming from California. I didn't know who the Florida Gators were.
the great Walt Kaczewski. Gino, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Congrats on the number being retired earlier this year, and all the best. Again, thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Joe.
All right, that's Gino Treader with us on the show. We'll continue right after this.